This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we'll meet the author of the textbook being used in the controversial class at FGCU called White Racism. But first, Florida Gulf Coast University brings New York Times bestselling author Edwin Black back to Southwest Florida for a series of talks early next month. He has spoken to audiences around the world, including before the United Nations, the British House of Commons, the Canadian House of Commons, the Israeli Knesset, and the U.S. House Committee on Foreign Affairs. Black's investigative work tackles topics related to genocide, human rights, corporate crime, and government corruption, just to name a few. And his books have garnered numerous awards, including nominations for both the Pulitzer Prize and the National Book Award. Edwin Black joins us now to explore the history of American eugenics movement and other surprising links to Nazi Germany. Edwin, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Good afternoon. Good to be back.
We are talking with New York Times bestselling author and investigative journalist Edwin Black about the black victims of Nazi policies. You can join this conversation, too, by giving us a call at 239-590-2580. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Edwin, the first lecture that you're going to be giving at FGCU is entitled Black Victims of Nazi Policy. You know, we're familiar with Jewish victims, like your parents, who are Holocaust survivors. And you often hear about gypsies as victims of the Nazis, but it doesn't seem like there's much out there on the subject of black victims of Nazism. Why is that?
Basically, Jewish victims have funded the inquiry into their victimization. Jewish victims were, of course, the most numerous of the victims of the Nazis. But I went far beyond that because I've been looking at the victims of Nazi policy from many different groups, and understand that I said not the Nazis and not the Holocaust, but Nazi policy. Why do I say Nazi policy? Because the subtitle to my presentation, Black Victims of Nazi Policy, is from Africa to Berlin to North Carolina. And so I trace the first genocide of the 20th century, not the Armenians, perpetrated by the Turks, as most people know, but the Hereros of Namibia, which at that time was called German Southwest Africa, in 1906. 80 to 90% of the Hereros were exterminated, using the word extermination and inventing and innovating the techniques that would then be used against the Jews in Nazi Germany. In fact, the perpetrators of the extermination of the Hereros were actually the proto-Nazis, who then went back to Germany and formed the nucleus of the Third Reich.
So to take it back for listeners who might not be familiar, you're talking about before the First World War, Germany had a colonial empire in Africa, and it included present-day Namibia, Burundi, Rwanda, and parts of Tanzania, more geographic land than the German mainland itself. And in one of those, the German Southwest Africa, which is now Namibia, you're telling us, is the Herero Wars broke out. Germany didn't apologize for that until 2004, 100 years later, and finally recognized it as a genocide. Tell me about, were the Herero a group of people?
The Hereros were, and of course the Namas, were tribes in Southwest Africa, in the nation now known as Namibia. And when Germany decided to set up colonies for what later became known as Lebensraum, but for what they called living space, when Germany did that, they came into conflict with these local people who did not want to be exploited, did not want their women raped at every corner, did not want their cattle stolen, and did not want to be indentured. And when they rose up, the Germans came down, this is before World War One, with a force of modern military that had been perfected in the military exploits of the Boer Wars and the late 19th century wars. They came down in 1906 and put numbers on their captives. Later on, those numbers transmogrified into tattoos used against the Jews. Mm-hmm. They decreed something called racial laws, which were never observed in Germany forbidding intermarriage. They invented something called death camps. There was one at Shark Island, which, of course, you know, they later had death camps in Nazi Germany. They also innovated the idea of transporting the victims to the death camp in railroad cars. So all of this was unknown. But my research does not stop there. And my presentation at Florida Gulf Coast University will not stop there.
Yeah, I know. It goes all the way to American shores. But I'm kind of staggered by the fact that people don't really know anything about this having happened in Africa.
Well, they didn't know that IBM organized the Holocaust before my first book. They didn't really have an understanding that the Rockefeller Foundation sent Mengele, funded the program that sent Mengele into Auschwitz. The reason I'm coming is because this history is not taught, not understood, but will enable people to understand that because one crime against humanity was not objected to, it led to other crimes against humanity, including the Holocaust. But it did not stop there. There were black victims in the United States who were subjected to sterilization and who were subjected to racial laws, which actually cited Nazi policy, even after World War II. And so this is going to be quite an eye-opener for the students and faculty. I take it from 1906 all the way to the present tense. But even more than that, I want to trace how is it that Africa became prone to this kind of victimization. And one of the central reasons that Africa became prone was that Africa was the victim of commercial kidnapping and slavery that was actually invented in Africa in the 7th century below the Tsitsi line. Now, I'm sure that most people have an idea about slavery in America. So if I asked you now, how many slaves were kidnapped out of Africa and brought to the United States, what would you say?
I really could not even hazard a guess.
Well, go ahead and hazard one.
Oh, I don't know.
388,000.
Yeah, I probably would have guessed less than that.
And the mortality rate was about 10 to 20% from the Middle Passage. But for 1,000 years before that, some 15 million Africans were kidnapped out of Africa and brought into the Arab world and into the Middle East to build the caliphate. With a mortality rate of some 50 to 70%. So Africa was being systematically robbed of its best, systematically being set up for further colonialization. It's not enough to say what happened. We have to explain how it happened. What were the conditions?
Well, what were the conditions that made them susceptible to that for so many hundreds of years? Do you have to go all the way back to the very beginning?
Well, I go back to the 7th century, but I don't want to preempt my lecture. But
you don't want to give a spoiler.
I don't want to. It's not a spoiler. It's a depressor.
Yeah.
But I've looked into the history of slavery, going all the way back thousands of years in all cultures and all religions, and it was based on commercial debt and military conquest. In the 7th century, during the Arab invasion of Africa, the Arabs had to stop at what is known as the Tsitsi fly line. That is the line below which there could be no further invasion. And since those people were beyond the caliphate, they were systematically taken up and conquered for slavery. Throughout the Arab world, and they were taken by means of conquest, capture, and in many instances, their own people, their own kings, their own tribal leaders sold them into slavery. So because Africa was set up for exploitation, the European powers in the 19th century, in what was known as the Scramble for Africa, decided to come in and colonize Africa. You have the Belgian Congo, you had the French colonies, the Dutch colonies, yeah. And in the Congo, they actually cut people's hands off when they didn't produce their rubber quotas. So I'm trying to give people the continuity of the crime. I'm trying to give the context of the crime and to understand that one man's tragedy, one man's victimization, Jewish or Gypsy, is every man's tragedy, because we see that the African was the victim, not only in Africa, but in Berlin. And the adherence of this Nazi policy actually continued the practices well into the 20th century, well after the fall of the Third Reich. And I'm speaking now of the eugenics program, especially in North Carolina, where the state eugenics board constantly compared their sterilization numbers to that of Nazi Germany.
I want to get to that in a second, but we are talking with New York Times bestselling author and investigative journalist Edwin Black about the black victims of Nazi policies. You can join our conversation by calling in at 239-590-2580. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So the subtitle of your talk on black victims of Nazi policy is From Africa to Berlin to North Carolina, as you just mentioned. So how did Nazi policy extend to we understand how it came from Africa. Well, it didn't come from. They took it to Africa, and then they brought it to Germany and then over to North Carolina. How did it get there?
It got there because American eugenics, which was the quest for a white, blonde, blue-eyed Aryan, or shall we say Nordic racial superiority, originated in the United States as a pseudoscience called eugenics. It was then exported back, not as racist thought, but as a racological, a fake pseudoscience called eugenics into pre-Nazi Germany. When Hitler came to power, he studied the American system, he studied the American books, and he implemented them with tremendous ferocity and velocity. In other words, the laws that were on the books in 27 states in America before Hitler came to power were implemented with great intensification in Nazi Germany. And of course, they escalated not into just sterilization, but what was actually the original quest of the original American eugenic scientist, the original American elite, and that quest was euthanasia. Or mass murder. It's important to understand that eugenics, which sought to wipe out 90% of Americans, and was a clear case of genocide in the United States, and was actually one of the five building blocks for genocide that Raphael Lemkin considered when he defined the term genocide. That this was an act of the progressive movement. The progressive movement was interested in helping society, in improving humanity. And they thought the best way to get rid of crime, the best way to get rid of overpopulation, the best way to get rid of low intelligence was to eliminate all the people that they thought were criminals, had low intelligence, and were the cause of overcrowding, because they falsely believed this fake idea that poverty was a genetic problem. You were born into poverty, and you were a born criminal. It isn't that criminals are made. It isn't that you fall into poverty. They thought it was a genetic trait. They thought that you had a genetic predisposition for prostitution, not that you fell on hard times or were exploited. And so these people, with the best of intentions, decided to organize the merciful elimination of 10% of the American population at a time, slicing off the bottom tenth, and then the bottom tenth of the residuum, and the bottom tenth of that, until there was no one left except those that resembled themselves. They wanted to get rid the Africans. They wanted to get rid of the Chinese, the Hispanics. They wanted to get rid of the Southern Europeans, the Sicilians, the Portuguese. And they actually wanted to get rid of the white guys with brown hair. They wanted to get rid of the Appalachians, feeling that they were mongrel Caucasians. There was even a pamphlet in Virginia entitled Mongrel Virginians, based upon the notion that these Virginians had to be eliminated. And who was behind this? It wasn't guys with Confederate flags. These were the best and brightest in the United States. These were the heads of universities. These were the doctors, the lawyers, the legislators, the scientists. These were the people who had the power to make it happen legally, and thought that they were doing a great benefit to society by eliminating all those not worthy of life.
Well, I want to make it clear, you have two talks coming up. The first one is Black Victims of Nazi Policy from Africa to Berlin to North Carolina, and that one's at 5:30 p.m. on Monday, February 5th in the Cohen Center Ballroom on FGCU's campus. And what we've slid into now is your discussion about eugenics and the ethics of scientific racism. So that's what we're discussing now.
And so when the Nazis took the front seat in driving the eugenic crusade by sterilizing thousands and thousands in Germany, by moving into gas chambers, by segregation, and by following all the principles that had been established by the American eugenic community, once Nazi Germany fell, the Americans just continued doing what they were doing the way they were doing it.
But we're talking about eugenics, but it probably came across as a little bit more sellable in that it was sterilization rather than marching people into gas chambers. So maybe...
Now there's where you're wrong.
Was it?
The first gas chamber legislation was introduced in Ohio in 1906. They wanted gas chambers. The term for it was lethal chamber. They finally got the first one in Nevada in 1928, which was used for capital punishment. But what they always wanted was to have a doctor write a prescription out for a public gas chamber. And in some parts of the United States, like in Lincoln, Illinois, they actually decided to let's use the word murder. The juveniles within their custody by serving them tubercular milk from tubercular cows. And they thought, well, if they're strong enough, then they will survive this tuberculosis. So there were many, many times when the concept of a gas chamber were brought up in legislation and in conversation.
My understanding.
I know it's hard to digest, is it not?
You know, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not following, because I was after post World War II saying we weren't marching people into the gas chambers, and then we went back to 1906 or 7, I think you said. So, but take me back through eugenics real quick, because my understanding of it is sterilizing people so that they don't continue to procreate, and
that was just one of the tenets.
So there are other ways that they were using.
Of course. One was marriage prohibition. Now, marriage prohibition said that people between the races, et cetera, could not marry. They criminalized that. That wasn't even overturned until our lifetime in the Supreme Court case Loving versus Virginia, when a criminal case of intermarriage was ruled not to be felonious. In Virginia, they had marriage voiding. So that means if they didn't like your marriage, if they thought that you had come in from another state, they would nullify your marriage. They also had the concept of incarceration. And so they invented many types of internment camps disguised as asylums, where juvenile delinquents and the poor would be kept, and people were accused of an unquantifiable defect called feeble-mindedness. They were put into mental hospitals. They had a one of the categories that they would put into these hospitals was women who smiled a lot but did not say much. So quiet women who smiled, who were pretty, were considered to be, quote, beguiling. And these women were also put away. And they could get out of these internment camps on condition of sterilization. Of course, there was one such case, a famous case, Buck versus Bell, where they wanted to sterilize three generations, a mother, her daughter, and a granddaughter. And this, of course, went to the Supreme Court when Oliver Wendell Holmes made his famous statement, "It is better for all the world that three generations of imbeciles are sterilized than to allow them to be executed for some future crime." This was about future crime. This was about the expectation that people were destined to commit a crime, and they were so destined by the defect in their genetic makeup.
Is this over? Is this done? Have we finished with the idea that people are genetically made up to be inferior people, or do you think that that belief still lingers?
I believe that the concept still lingers. It comes wrapped up in many different types of boxes. The idea that we have the right to sterilize other people because we think we can is still observed in Oregon. We have people who still want to improve society by getting rid of anyone that they believe is inferior. I wrote a book about this, War Against the Weak, and I tried to explain that not only how it happened in the 20th century, but how it's being reinvented as nugenics, where corporations can now decide who can live and who can die in the 21st century.
But how is that? I don't. What do you mean by nugenics? Are you talking? What kind of corporations are making these types of decisions? Are you talking about the healthcare industry?
Insurance companies.
Yeah.
So by the largest insurer of automobile casualty in Canada, made a decision that one of its covered persons could not collect an insurance policy because their ancestors had a blood defect. There was genetic testing that was designed to find a predisposition that would disqualify you from employment, and so there was something called anti-genetic discrimination legislation was introduced into Great Britain to avoid what they called a genetic ghetto. And this same legislation was replicated in the United States, opposed solely by the insurance industry. And the idea is, if you can't insure a person, and the person can't get a job, and can't get an education, and can't get financing, then they can't really get out of their genetic ghetto. And so there was the insurance companies of America that delayed that legislation in the United States for 2 years, something that should have passed immediately. I don't want to preempt all of what I have to say when I get to Fort Myers, but I understand it'll be a shock, but this book, War Against the Weak, and the research that I've done has been course adopted coast to coast and has spawned, as it hoped to, as it publicly stated that it wished to, many other books. And I'm so happy to be coming back to Florida Gulf Coast University. I was there a couple of years ago to explain how IBM organized the Holocaust, and I'm happy to come back again and try to give people an understanding of the of the greater tragedies and injustice that that have gripped our society. There's no way to understand what's happening to us now and what may happen to us in the future if we cannot comprehend what has come before to presage the situation.
Well, you stand at a very interesting point with your study of history and knowing where we came from, and now we're kind of, I don't want to say on the precipice, maybe we're beyond that precipice, of the genetic research that is filling databanks on 23andMe and Ancestry.com with records of so many people's genetics and what may come to pass down the road when, like you mentioned, the case with the guy with one genetic marker saying he had some sort of a predisposition to some disease.
Well, that's right. Santa Fe Railroad was doing genetic testing to find people with a predisposition for carpal tunnel so they wouldn't hire them. There were people who, you know, it isn't the genetic code that we are blaming. We don't blame the alphabet for Mein Kampf, but we have to understand that all of these concepts, all of this information can be weaponized for by the wrong types of people, and we have already shown that the best among us, the brightest among us, can use these ideas to espouse concepts of elimination of our neighbors, genocide against our fellow citizens, and attempt to create a utopia that they will define, but one which can never be realized.
But generally it's going to be couched in a capitalist, how to make the most money and cover yourself as an insurance agency and things like that. That's really interesting research.
Well, that will be in the 21st century. You know, with all the information being gathered about us genetically, and with this information being sold not only on from computer to computer, but via cell phone to cell phone, it is now possible for a person to walk into a store and in a cashless environment and to have everything about them be identified. What is their habit? What is their purchasing? But also, what is their value to the corporations? Are these people going to produce enough buying and enough economic value to justify their own existence? And I believe the services which are being rendered to them, and I think that we must now recognize where our country is going, where the world is going. This is no longer politics. This is technology. And we need to understand that what Orwell wrote in 1984 was just a prologue to what we're about to see, especially when they marry it to RFID, which will be a radio signal in virtually every object, the Internet of Things, where people can just walk through a room and be sensed, where people can drive their car and be sensed, is really quite a frightening prospect. But it's one that has historical roots and one that has historical precedents and one which has historical examples. Because our society currently has a collective memory that only goes back to last Thursday, mm-hmm. It is the university which has the duty and the obligation to give the context, the information, the knowledge, the background, the history to show how we came to where we are and where we are headed. And I'm grateful that I'll be coming back to Florida Gulf Coast University. It'll be actually a 10-part series that will go throughout southern Florida and then into Fort Myers, and it's going to be a pleasure to come back.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. I want to thank our guest, New York Times bestselling author, investigative journalist Edwin Black. Always a mind-blowing experience getting to talk with you.
All right. Thank you very much, and I'll certainly be back.
All right. His talk on eugenics and the roots of scientific racism will be held in the Cohen Center Ballroom on FGCU's campus at 11:30 a.m. on Wednesday, February the 7th. Coming up, we're joined by the author of Racism Without Racists, the required text of the controversial white racism class at FGCU, before his lecture tonight at the university on colorblind racism in the Trump era.